From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Coming up, we'll be joined by Gary Collins and Bill Blaha from Collins and Blaha Law. We're also joined by Eric Edoff, Executive Director of the Michigan Education Association. And rounding out the program is Superintendent of Clawson Schools, Billy Schellenbarger. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR. With Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is one of School Talk's supporting sponsors, Collins and Blaha Law, and I'm joined today by Gary Collins and Bill Blaha. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy.
Appreciate you here, and I'd like to thank you very much for your continued support of the program. It's really helping us get the word out with regard to all things related to schools. So, Gary, I think a good place to start is tell us a little bit about your firm and a bit of background on it.
Sure. We're unique in that we have more people who have worked directly for school districts than any other law firm. For example, we have four attorneys who have been heads of labor relations for school districts. We have one who's been a deputy superintendent. We have one who's been a chief of staff. We have two with teaching experience and one who worked in special education. So we're able to both not only give legal advice, but practical application of the law, which is something that everybody who works with us really enjoys, working with school districts and giving that practical application.
You know, and I can say with 100% certainty and confidence that in my time working with you, you help keep me out of trouble on many occasions, and it has to do with that breadth of experience that you bring to a school district from the firm. So tell us a little bit about the kinds of law work that you do, such as litigation or others.
Sure. Our primary component would be labor law, because the largest expenditure in a school district is for the employees. And so we're always involved in union negotiations, any litigation that flows from that. We're also then, of course, involved with the students on student rights, on matters with that. We assist also both with construction and bonds. So if you're building a building, we're going to help you on the construction and we're going to help you finance it.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that goes on in a school district, we're able to help with.
You know, speaking of things that go on in a school district, in my time, both back as a high school principal as well as a superintendent for many years, one of the most critical things we dealt with was the impact of Michigan's open carry law and whether or not community members or parents could bring a concealed weapon or a weapon on school property that's visible. And Bill Blaha, I understand you were involved with the Michigan Supreme Court case on weapons and school districts. Tell us a little bit about what that case is about first, to sort of set an understanding of the impact this has had on school districts.
Sure. In 2015, in the Ann Arbor Public Schools, at one of their high schools, Pioneer High School, they had a music concert, and at the end of the concert, as people were leaving, an individual who was carrying a pistol in a holster, somebody yelled, "He's got a gun." Mm-hmm. And, you know, pandemonium and panic ensued. The police were contacted. The disturbance was quelled. However, the school board was insistent, based upon what community demands were, is to fix this, adopt a policy to ban visitors from open carrying on school property at school events. The law for visitors at that time was insurmountable in favor of a visitor's right to open carry, much to the chagrin of schools. Students were already prohibited for an extended period of time under the school code from carrying weapons onto school grounds, or could face expulsion. and other criminal acts. Same thing with employees, based upon case law and the powers of conferred upon schools as an employer can ban them from carrying weapons. So it was visitors at issue, and through the court system, Washtenaw County Circuit Court, the Court of Appeals, the roadblocks, Court of Appeals had already decided that schools could not regulate weapons. They were a quasi-municipal corporation, and as a result, it shut down any potential arguments. Ann Arbor persisted and pursued the claims in those various court systems that ended up in the Michigan Supreme Court.
So we're currently with Gary Collins and Bill Blaha from Collins and Blaha Law. And just a point of clarification, I've known for many years that there are lots of places in Michigan long before this where you couldn't take a handgun or a weapon like a courthouse or certain places. Is that to suggest that this was a loophole that didn't address schools?
There, exactly. That's what the gun owners was arguing, and others were indicating it was an open carry loophole because the federal government, through their statutes, banned weapons within 1,000 feet on school grounds unless licensed by the state, and the state, who licenses on a concealed pistol license, had already prohibited through the legislature carrying concealed with a CPL unless there's certain exceptions that applied. And so it begged the question about open carry. And is that the right? The U.S. Supreme Court had already determined in a decision called Heller that the government can regulate under the Second Amendment weapons, including in sensitive areas such as the courts, like you mentioned, or on school grounds. So this was a Michigan statutory issue that was at play here.
And at the time Ann Arbor was in play with the courts, was there something also happening in Clio schools?
Yes, sir. So Clio had also taken similar action. And that went to the Genesee County Circuit Court, and the Genesee County Circuit Court ruled against Clio schools. So that got consolidated, the Ann Arbor Washtenaw and the Genesee Washtenaw court cases at the Court of Appeals. They ruled in favor of the schools at the Court of Appeals, and then that's what went to the Supreme Court, that conflicting case law.
And, you know, as we all can appreciate, given the amount of school violence and the attention that it justifiably receives, this, for many people working in schools, seems like an obvious necessity. And as it relates to today, what is the law that school districts have in front of them that they can use to enforce the whole issue of weapons? What would be a nice recap of what is able to happen in a school district?
The Michigan Supreme Court conferred the authority on local school boards in the state of Michigan to determine what policies they want to adopt in the best interest of their communities. And it varies, you know, southeastern Michigan to up north. And that's what the benefit of the court was, to just let the local school boards decide. So in Ann Arbor, and many in southeastern Michigan, believe that guns don't belong in schools, open carry. It creates chaos and anxiety amongst staff and students, supported by the MDE, as a matter of fact, where other communities elsewhere, are comfortable with open carry in the schools. That's their choice.
Yep, I remember a story. This is probably a good 20 years ago. But it was right in and around the period after Columbine, where schools really stepped up their vigilance around school safety and things. And a school district brought in dogs to sniff for explosives or whatnot. And they didn't realize they were doing it in a community that had a long-standing tradition of going hunting after school. And an incredible number of students in the student parking lot had weapons in their trunk. And it speaks to your point about it might be the right fit for one community, but for another community who values hunting, I know lots of families where hunting is an annual family bonding event. And I remember this school district, I can't even begin to tell you how many students had weapons in their trunk because they're all, I think they were going duck hunting or something after school. And it really sheds light on the need for the law to be somewhat flexible based on the local school district. So, interesting stuff. I appreciate that perspective, and I think it's important for our School Talks listeners to understand how this law is currently in play.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Gary Collins, I understand that, as you mentioned, the firm has quite a bit of experience in labor law. Tell us a little bit about some of the publications you've had or have done around Michigan law and teachers.
Sure. I think most people understand that teacher tenure law is one of the more complicated areas of the law, and it's widely perceived as a area that is hard to move in and hard to understand. So 30 years ago, Bill and I decided that we needed to codify this law and start publishing on it. And since then, we've published four updates of that initial one, and it's used as an example in most school districts. The unions use it because we can write in a neutral sense, and also actually the administrative law judges use it at the tenure commission. And so it has helped people understand, if you're going to navigate through tenure, at least you have a textbook, if you would, to help you get through that process.
And, you know, my familiarity with the book is it's a white cover with a big red apple
on it. That's correct.
And for any school administrator working, listening to this program, there's a better than average chance there's a copy of that book somewhere in your administration building, because it really, for those auto mechanic fans from years ago, there used to be a manual called the Chilton's Manual that showed you everything about a car, how everything fits together, kind of like an exploded diagram of your engine. And that's my analogy to this book. And I've read it many, many times, depending on the situation. So an incredible piece of work that I know lots of people have used over the years. So moving back to courts, Bill, you've been involved in drafting and filing amicus briefs with the Michigan Supreme Court on a number of education issues. Give us an example of a couple that you think are high profile and maybe the most relevant from a broad perspective on schools.
With Gary Collins' leadership, we have sought to be in the forefront of many legal issues in the state. I mean, besides the tenure book, but also Gary was instrumental in crafting an evaluation tool for all administrators. And we have looked and discussed about, on behalf of our clients, if there is something big that's going to impact the state at the Michigan Supreme Court. Like, for example, Gary was the lead on a case called Batista on administrator retirement interpretations of the statute. That's still ongoing. I was involved in one, and I find this of interest, that the focus on public education in this state is so strong, and it's a significant element of our democratic society, and education of our youth and how governance occurs to best serve students. So what's interesting from a macro level is the powers of the State Board of Education and State Superintendent and the Governor. That has been a source of intrigue and conflict through the years. For example, Governor Blanchard wanted to eliminate the State Board of Education and create an elected superintendent. And Governor Engler sought to transfers and did, and that's the case we were involved in, transfer powers, administrative powers from the State Board to the powers of the State Superintendent. Governor Snyder transferred the school reform department from the Michigan Department of Education to Department of Management and Budget. Governor Whitmer just created MyLEAP, another department outside the scope for pre-K and post, K-12 into the higher level structure there. So there has been an evolution of what seems to be turf on policymaking, and the PTA, what we represented, the state PTA, that was opposed to the transfer of powers that Governor Engler was seeking. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled that he did have the power to transfer because the State Board of Education is not a fourth branch of government, but rather is within the executive branch. So those powers were granted. However, the significance of the opinion was not great in my view, because his desire to transfer to the state superintendent, was still, much like a public school, appointed by the school board, hire, fire by the school board, etc. So, but it did establish the powers of the governor to effectuate public education by exercising executive directives.
So we're continuing our conversation here with Bill Blaha and Gary Collins from Collins and Blaha. And in addition to all of the legal work that you've done, which is pretty impressive when you consider the implications of any one of these, I can tell you that in my time in education, the ability for what's expected of us to change is a lot like the weather. Depending on who has the control, where the forces are coming. And I appreciate, Bill, your delineation between how the state board operates, which is an elected board, the state superintendent, and then the governor and the legislature. All of them at different times have had their hand in attempting to reinvent education. And while all of that happens, the schools are sort of left to wait to see what the fallout is and then sort of row the boat in that direction. So one last thing, Gary Collins, one of the things I think has been a hallmark of your firm is the ability for you in the labor environment to really get parties involved, which is typically partisan, to work toward a compromise that is best for both parties. And why do you think it's possible at the state level but not the national one?
Primarily because we have relationships at the state level, that because of term limits, at times we cannot do that at the national level, and because of the partisanship and the turnover in offices, people aren't developing relationships like they used to. And if at the local level, where if you can focus on a problem, you can focus moving forward on trying to find a solution for it. And we're frequently consulted, both by school districts and by school districts operating with unions, of trying to find solutions for problems, not in a partisan way, but trying to find a solution. Bill Blaha was talking about our role on amicus curiae, which is where it's called a friend of the court, where you're not the party involved, but you are asked to submit a brief explaining what's going on. People frequently ask us to submit briefs on court cases so we can explain from our perspective what's going on, because many of the statutes we assisted in drafting, and we're working right now on trying to draft another one that addresses the issue that school districts are having with the cost of the health insurance exceeding the income of starting teachers.
Yep.
And trying to find a way to move forward on that.
Gary Collins and Bill Blaha, you've given our School Talks listeners some straightforward, easy-to-understand issues that, by all accounts, are pretty complex otherwise, especially the discussion of weapons and how school districts have the authority. And I want to thank both of you for joining us on the program today. I sincerely appreciate your support, and I look forward to your continued good work.
Thank you, Dr. Livernois.
Thank you.
Before we head to a word from our sponsors, here's what Troy Schools Superintendent Rich Macheski has to say about working with Collins and Blaha.
Collins and Blaha is an incredibly important strategic partner as we navigate challenges in the ever-evolving landscape of school law. Their accessibility, attention to clients' needs, and exceptionally professional staff sets Collins and Blaha apart from all others.
Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Eric Edoff, Executive Director of the Michigan Education Association. All this and more coming up right after the break.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernois.
Joining us now in the program is Eric Edoff, the new Executive Director for the Michigan Education Association. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's start with, what is the Michigan Education Association?
Sure. The Michigan Education Association is the largest public union in the state of Michigan, representing teachers, paraprofessionals, other support staff, higher education personnel, all with a focus on education.
Okay. And when was the MEA founded? Because I believe it initially started with teachers, correct?
Yes, it's a very old organization, actually. It began in Ypsilanti back in 1852.
1852, wow. And you mentioned these other groups who might be a member. Mm-hmm. So who can become a member of the MEA?
So anyone affiliated with a public school or a public higher education institution, community college, can become affiliated with our association, and we obviously provide support in different ways based on your job, your responsibilities, the issues that you face, and also, I guess, the geographic location in which you're located throughout the state as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, having once been a member of the MEA back when I was a teacher, tell us a little bit about what role the MEA plays in advocating for educators and support staff in Michigan.
Sure. So it's broad and specific as well. So at times, it can be advocating for individual members of the association, both in a proactive and a needed reactive way. But what we like to focus on more is advocating for the profession in general and really trying to create a shift over the last couple of years to focus on the needs of education as a profession, as a holistic profession. And as we've seen in our classrooms, and I know you're very familiar with this, some of the challenges that we face, some of the issues that are more imminent, that we need to bring awareness to this in the political sphere, we need to bring awareness to this in the public sphere in order for education to continue to rise and to rise further, because we all believe, I think, no matter what our individual beliefs are or our take on things, that education is vitally important, and it's vitally important for our families and for our students, really for our state.
You know, you bring up an example. For many years, I heard as superintendent from people who really are not in the know in education about, you know, we need more plumbers and we need more people to work with their hands. And they're very much not aware of the fact that there are career and technical education programs all across the state being taught by MEA members that prepare students for just about any trade or profession you can imagine. Even on this show, we've had multiple guests highlighting career and technical education programs, whether it's preparing building trades or health sciences and that. And I do know that with the state's emphasis on CTE, I've known on many, many occasions, even in my experience, where the MEA and the teachers doing that kind of work have really risen to the challenge of providing that kind of instruction for students. So how many total members are there in the MEA?
So right now there's about 120,000 members of the organization, and spanning a variety of different job responsibilities across the state.
Yep. And does the MEA offer, in addition to advocacy for its members, does it offer in any way legal representation for teachers in the event of a situation?
It does. It does. Yeah, part of membership is inclusive of any kind of legal representation that's required while performing the duties of their job, of their position. These can be criminal defenses if necessary, but civil defenses as well. But more common are just defense for workplace disputes or workplace issues or situations where there is potentially an issue with what the contract says versus what's being implemented in the school. And that's by far the most common type of support that members need.
And, you know, sort of walking right alongside of that, given the rate at which legislation and education policy change, if there's one constant in this world is change, which we've experienced in this state for many, many years, how does the MEA help teachers navigate those changes, whether for the good or for, in this perspective, the bad?
I think that's a really important question and something that is challenging, because we want our educators to focus on their jobs, which is educating their kids. And we all know that that's a challenging but very rewarding career. And all the changes that you speak of come at us at a very high rate of speed and change things under our feet, and we don't even realize it sometimes. So we really try to balance supporting those changes the best we can from an organizational standpoint in order to not overwhelm our members with what they primarily need to be doing. But also, we don't want them blindsided either. So we have ways of disseminating information through the organization, through our local groups or our local organizations, our local districts. But we really are mindful of that balance, because I think it's if you are too consumed with the changes and all the things happening to you or at you, then I think you become even more overwhelmed with what you're trying to do on a day-to-day basis.
You know, you made me think of one element in Michigan. I imagine it might be in some other places as well, but in Michigan, we sort of have this duality where we have a state board of education that establishes priorities and goals, and then we have a legislature that can introduce bills that affect change in education policy. And those two entities, in many, many instances, if not most, operate independent of one another, creating a situation where, in my experience, the people doing the work are often caught in the middle. But by no means is either party have malicious intent. You just end up in the middle of this group wants this particular thing done and this group wants the other. And as a result of that, you end up stuck in the middle. And in that thinking, how does the MEA, when it establishes like priorities that you want to address, whether legislatively or policy, how do you engage your members to prioritize those kinds of things?
Sure, we use a variety of different communication tools to engage them, but most importantly, as we know from all of the work we've done over the years, that engagement comes from relationships. And if you want people to become engaged in process, change, political action, just advocacy in general, I think it best comes from standing relationships that people already have. So what we really try to do is work with our regional-based offices, and then more importantly, our local offices, because the local leaders that represent the teachers and support personnel of our individual school districts have the relationships with their staff members and really know which ones are their key players and their informal leaders and the ones that are going to help rally around issues when they become necessary.
Mm-hmm. One last thing. Give me one major challenge facing the MEA as we go forward.
One of the reasons that I wanted to get involved with the organization is I see a lot of voids and a lot of parallel conversations in education. You referenced the State Board of Education versus the legislature, and we've seen that kind of ping pong back and forth over the last many years. And I think we really need to centralize education issues and depoliticize them as much as possible. I think that obviously the political lens is always going to be used in everything, unfortunately, and even in education, and we wish that wasn't the case. But I think there is sort of a realization by most people in Michigan about the importance of a quality education for their kids, and certainly the experience of their children going through schools. And I think that the biggest challenge is engaging the entire state in a non-political way about what's best for the future of our state. And we know that it is most critically reliant on high quality education. So that's why I'm involved. That's why I'm so passionate about the work. And I'm willing to work with anyone, any partner, anyone with a different feeling or view on things. If their end goal is improving education, we're there to have the conversation and work with them.
We're going to leave it right there. The words no better spoken than that. Eric Edoff, Executive Director of the Michigan Education Association. Thanks so much for joining us on School Talks.
Thank you.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll have Superintendent of Clawson Schools, Billy Schellenberger. All this and more coming up on School Talk 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins & Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks is Billy Schellenberger, Superintendent of Clawson Schools in Oakland County. Welcome to the program, Billy.
Honored to be here, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
I appreciate that. So let's start with Clawson Schools. Where are you located, and what is the current enrollment, and how many schools do you serve in the community?
Sure. Well, we'll start with where we're located. It's for those of you who are into Oakland County mile roads, we're a 14-mile and Livernoy, coincidentally, area, which puts us on that east portion of Oakland County, right smack dab between Royal Oak and Troy. So what we have there is essentially three schools, Clawson Elementary, Clawson Middle, Clawson High School, and then we have an early childhood center that serves students from birth to four. And what that entails is about just K through 12 or TK, we call it transitional kindergarten through 12th grade, just over 1,200 students. So, and that's not including our group at the early childhood center.
And when you indicate your location, just for our School Talks listeners, this is a shameless plug, but I am a direct descendant of the street Livernoy.
Right.
I'm actually a 12th generation Livernoy.
Okay.
From the farmers who had the strip farms along the Detroit River. So given the size of your district and knowing that schools are funded on a per pupil basis, what kinds of strategies are you employing in Clawson to either increase or maybe in your case, maintain enrollment?
Sure. That is the, you know, the million-dollar question is revolves around enrollment and what we do and how we're funded. Obviously, you know, we're fortunate to have the students we have in the community that we're in, and we do a lot of things. We believe as a community and school district to promote our district to create culture that where people want to be. So just to put it into perspective a little bit, of our 1,200 plus students, how we're funded is $9,608 per pupil is the essentially the minimum amount you can get in our state for a student. And again, that is how we're primarily funded, and that's what we are afforded. So, you know, in a small community in Oakland County, which we're one of the smallest communities and school districts, we're a 2x2, 2 mile by 2 mile community. And again, with 1,200 students, one of the smaller surrounded by very large districts. So it's very competitive in Oakland County, both academically and with that school of choice model that we have and that we employ. So where we start in terms of retaining our students and making sure that they're in a place where they want to be and attracting other families and students is culture.
That's fascinating. With respect to the facilities in the district, tell us a little bit about some of the bond work that you're doing to improve the facilities.
Sure. So I'll start with our community once again. We have passed in 2021 and 2023 both, we passed cumulatively about an $80 million in bond issue and overwhelmingly passed. And the support of our community is unbelievable. And this goes back to what we were just discussing. And they understand how important public schools and our schools certainly are to our small community and have supported us every step of the way. With in a space in our county and state where for public schools, we're battling declining enrollment. Although you can appreciate this, Dr. Livernoy, for the first time in 14 years, our district, we're up. We've increased this year. So we're very, very excited about that. But back to your question, with that declining enrollment and being funded based on enrollment, it's difficult to address some things, whether it's staffing, facilities, operations, You know, so you have to go after some bond work. So again, we've had some great support from our community, and we're in the fourth year of a five-year, $80 million project, coincidentally with Chrisman Company, who is housed in this building on the 26th floor. They've been a fantastic partner to us, as has Wakely, our architect, in executing this five-year plan. So the long and short of it is we're touching every single space in our district. There's not anything that's not getting you know, a facelift, and that's important for us. And this goes back to that retaining students and families. It's who doesn't want to be in a beautiful new facility with brand new sitting in brand new furniture, with learning instructionally from brand new technology and curriculum. That's important, and this is our opportunity to take advantage of that, and we are. So we're in a space where we have right-sized our district and created a central campus model where TK through 12, which is our transitional kindergarten, we're on one campus, and they're all connected. Very unique in Oakland County. It's more, I'm an up north kid from Gladwin, Michigan, and it's more that kind of feel, where you have these smaller districts and you're right-sized into that same space. So this is the first year we opened a brand new elementary school, a 100-year-old building we renovated completely, corner to corner, and brought in 540 elementary school students to our new Clawson Elementary School. So now that 1,200 plus group of students, we're together on the same campus, and everything is new. The high school gets the last touches this summer, rolling into that fall of 2025, and we'll cap that work next year. But to be a part of this project, to be a part of the two bond campaigns, and watch the support that our community really stepped up with, which is not surprising in Clawson, truthfully, and to be executing this with great partners and watching this new these new shiny aspects of our facilities take shape because of this work, this effort and energy. And it's, as you know, Dr. Livernois, it's a heavy lift. I'm sure you've been through many of them in your career, and this is my first. And albeit it's going well, the time we spend and the energy we spend, especially in a small district where I'm pretty hands-on with it, is extensive. So mm-hmm. I'll be honest, when we're done, I'm going to have some more time on my hands to focus on our kids and staff and being boots on the ground, because it does take a lot of that time. But it's great work. It's for our students, and I'm excited about the work that we'll wrap up in the next year.
Yeah, Billy Schellenberger, you are the right man for the job in Clawson. I sincerely appreciate your time on School Talks today, and best of luck to you going forward in Clawson.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Livernois.
I'd like to thank Gary Collins and Bill Blaha from Collins and Blaha Law, one of School Talks' supporting sponsors. I'd also like to thank Eric Edoff from the Michigan Education Association, and Billy Schellenberger from Clawson Schools for a great program this afternoon. And remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Until next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.